Hi there, hockey fans, and welcome back to RotoWire Signature NHL Hockey Pod Podcast with Statsman and AJ. Friends, I'm Paul Bruno in Toronto, Ontario, and you can follow me at Statsman22. My partner in crime is AJ Scholes, located in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. You can follow him at AJScholes24. He's right near RotoWire headquarters over there in Madison, Wisconsin. We're grateful also for our support from our sponsor at Owner's Box. You'll hear a little bit more about them later. But AJ, I want to bring you in. And I know you're feeling pretty good about opening night. We didn't talk about this, but I did not like seeing the Lightning go back to that empty net situation after three or four times in that game and allowing three empty net goals. To me, if this catches on, it's going to wreck things for fantasy hockey. That's how big a deal I think it is. But what were your impressions, and do you think there was something more to that?
Well, no, I mean, I think the number one thing is I actually really like the fact that, that Cooper pulled the goalie with like 5 minutes left. I feel like so often it's like, oh, we're down three. We'll pull the goalie with like 2 minutes remaining. Like, you're not going to score three goals in 2 minutes. I mean, it's not impossible, but it's just so unlikely. So I did appreciate the fact that he pulled the goalie early to give his team an opportunity. I was surprised that he went back to it after, the Penguins scored a few seconds later. I mean, I guess there was still plenty of time. But I guess I would say I was a little surprised to see him go back to it a couple times. But the initial decision with that much time on the clock, I felt was like the right move and one we don't see often enough, if I'm being completely honest. You're pulling the goalie, you're trying to win, and you're not going to do that if you're down two and there's a minute and a half left. Like, you need to pull the goalie at like the 4 minute mark or something if you only have, if you have two goals to get. So,
yeah,
I like the initial call, though.
I don't have a problem with that from what you just explained. Sure, pull the goalie for 5 minutes left, but once the goal goes in, don't keep going back to that well, because you're going to cheapen the value of goal scoring, in effect. Can you imagine if this keeps up all year long? We're going to get a bunch of games with 3-4 empty net goals at the end of the season. There's going to be guys with 7 or 8, maybe 10 empty netters among the 20 that they do score, and it inflates their productivity almost artificially and skews fantasy scoring in general, and maybe even the scoring races. Who knows? That's the part that I don't like, and I hope it doesn't catch on. But I also think it was worth noting that after the game, it was implied that he, John Cooper, wanted to embarrass his team because they didn't really play a very strong game. And he says, you know what, let's let them read the paper the next day and see a 6-2 score line as opposed to maybe 3 or 4. So there is that side of it. But I really hope we don't see multiple games with many empty net goals scored in them. That's the part that troubled me. So I'll say that. Second thing I want to discuss with you is just before we went to air today, the news came down that Ottawa finally found a way to bring Brady Tkachuk's team back to the table and him back to the organization as he signed a long-term deal. What are the particulars?
Well, it looks like it's a 7-year, $57.5 million contract. It breaks down to $8.2 million a year, which is a pretty hefty chunk of change there. I'll be honest, I was surprised that the 8th year wasn't tacked on here. I mean, unless there's something in the CBA, which is entirely possible, but it's my understanding that, him being a returning player could have signed the 8th year. So I was a little surprised not to see that on there. But otherwise, my other thought on this is it did feel a tad high, if I'm being perfectly honest here. The fact of the matter is, yes, he's trending in the right direction, certainly. But he's only 22. He's got, a couple 44 point seasons under his belt. Paying him $8 million a year, you've got to be getting 60 to 80 out of him, I think. I was a little bit surprised at the price tag, but he is their top line left winger, and so if you want to lock him up for most of his prime, they've certainly done that.
Yeah, and I mean, I have the perspective here in Toronto of seeing the Leafs lock up their core guys for $10 million plus. So to me, this almost feels like a bit of a bargain when you consider that comparison, AJ. But we know that the ownership in Ottawa doesn't have quite the deep pockets that they do at the mint known as MLSE. So maybe that factors into a viewpoint to balance the situation a little bit. But I think that it's great that they got him locked up for 8 years. They buy into some of his free agency eligibility time with that contract as well. It's not a bridge deal. This takes him well into his free agency eligibility. So it's a win for the team. Certainly a great payday for, let's call him the signature player on the Ottawa franchise. And maybe other players around the league take a look and say, wow, is Ottawa turning a new page here and getting serious about putting a team together? They sent a very loud message by getting their main guy signed for that length of time. So I think it's a good day for the Ottawa Senators. And that said, don't expect him to be playing tonight or even on the weekend, I don't think. He's going to need some time to get ready, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely not. You know, they said he's not playing tonight. He'll supposedly be in the arena. I mean, I guess it depends, like, how, you know, where his legs are, how much skating he's been doing. I suppose it's not impossible that he could play on the weekend. So we'll have to definitely want to check back on rotowire.com to keep an eye on that one. But for sure, not tonight.
Excellent call there. I'm glad you advertised the great work that you guys do at the head office to keep the depth charts up to date. And we remind our listeners, if you're getting ready for DFS play, you got to know who's in and who's out, and also who's on the power play, AJ. And that's my segue into the theme today. We covered off the four divisions and the breakdown of the rosters here, but I want to take some time today to talk about the special teams from each of the clubs. And also, we're going to bring back our DFS segment where we're going to talk both DraftKings lineups and FanDuel lineups a little bit later on in today's show. So without further ado, let's go into the team power play setups and any other news around the clubs, too, we can throw in. I'll begin with a look at the Anaheim Ducks. They have decided to infuse some youngsters into the mix, but it's still older hands that really run things, at least from the forward ranks on the special teams. Look at the names like Max Comtois is a guy that's coming into his own there, and he'll be featured on that first power play. But Ryan Getzlaf, the old standby, the longtime captain of this club, remains a fixture at center in the first team power play. Rickard Rakell, another veteran, will be on the right flank. They put a rookie in on the back end, a couple of rookies in at the back end. Jamie Drysdale, a top defensive prospect in the league with some offensive upside, will be paired with Trevor Zegras, a centerman who's going to play a lot of top 6 minutes for the club. He'll be on the point on that first power play, AJ. What do you think about that mix, and any other guys from the second unit that bear attention in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the key thing, as you kind of alluded to, Paul, is that most of these are pretty flexible, especially on a team like Anaheim that's you know, probably going to struggle this year. So, you know, Jakob Silfverberg's a guy that'll kind of lead the way, I think, on the second group, could push for more opportunities with the first team here. And then Kevin Shattenkirk is as well. You know, he's obviously slowed down a bit, a little past his prime, but in a lot of ways has almost become a power play specialist the last couple of years. So he's another name that could, you know, challenge the likes of Jamie Drysdale for that spot. So, you know, they're definitely fluid. They can change game to game, power play to power play, especially on Anaheim. There are a handful of clubs that I think you'll see, you know, basically the first group is the first group, and there's not not a lot of changing that. I don't think that's the case in Arizona here. You know, for them, they'll probably have some flexibility as well. There's a few names that I think are cemented on that top group, and that's Jacob Chychrun quarterbacking that, the top group, and then Phil Kessel lining up in the slot. Probably the biggest news today for Arizona is that Phil Kessel will play in that season opener, which means his Ironman streak will continue. I believe it's sitting at 901 games right now, consecutive games played for Phil the Thrill. So Biggest news for them today is that they will get Kessel, and he'll play on that top unit. You know, the rest of it, I think, are guys that could come in and out. Nick Schmaltz, Larson Krause, probably not as secure in their spots, especially with guys like Clayton Keller and Christian Fisher around.
Yeah, I would agree. Larson Krause, for me, looks like a guy who will be the net front presence and could get a few garbage goals coming up off his body parts from shots from the point, or Phil Kessel missiles from the side. So he might have some extra value as long as he's playing on that top unit. Connor Timmins, a youngster who is plugged into this defense corps, gets a prime assignment to play left defense on the power play, I'll say. And Jacob Chychrun has some value in leagues that count hits and block shots as well. In fact, when you factor that all in, as well as the offense that he provided, he was among the league leaders in terms of value in those particular formats heading into this particular season. So a name to think about there. Clayton Keller, a guy that I think could vault into a first-line power play role too. This is a guy who's going to be a key scorer in 5-on-5, and you can bet that he's going to get a look at the top unit. And then they brought over Shane Gostisbehere, who is a couple of years removed from his career season best, and they would be thrilled if he could rediscover that form. If he did, he might even challenge Chychrun to anchor that first power play. In Boston, they're talking big dollars with another defenseman there, Charlie McAvoy. AJ, I haven't seen any conclusion there, but they're talking about a long-term deal. And I heard a rumble that it could start with a $10 million price tag on an annual cap hit. That would be something that really shocks the Boston salary cap structure. But he's that important to this club because there's a tremendous drop-off in terms of the defensive ranks there and the scoring ability they're in. But he'll be partnered with David Pastrnak on the point. And Taylor Hall is, of course, a guy that they're looking for big things from. He'll plug in along with Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron in what should be one of the league's more potent power plays, AJ.
Well, yeah, and then, you know, this is one that it's going to take an injury, really, for anybody else to get in this power play. You don't take Marchand, Bergeron, and Pastrnak off. And this is one also, you know, Arizona and Anaheim might be, in terms of DFS options, might be teams where you could consider maybe targeting somebody on that second group because they'll still get some opportunities maybe close to even. I would not say that's necessarily the case in Boston. I would expect this top group to really see most of the power play minutes. I mean, if you figure in, you know, a normal two-minute power play, I wouldn't be surprised to see these guys out there for a minute and a half. You know, compared to, you know, other teams where it might be close to a minute split each way. So definitely something to watch out for there. If there's a power play that is shuffled around and tenuous at best, it's definitely the Buffalo Sabres. Part of that being that their lineup, I just think, and their line combinations are tenuous here. Looks like we're going to get, you know, Casey Mittelstadt, Jeff Skinner, Victor Olofsson, Rasmus Dahlin as the first group there with, you know, could be Tage Thompson, could be Rasmus and Asplund. But I think there's any number of guys that could challenge pretty much anybody. Like, if I had to pick any one guy that's maybe locked in here, I would maybe say Victor Olofsson. He has put up some really good numbers in his two full years at least in the league. Like 78 points in 116 games, if I'm recalling correctly. So he's maybe the one guy that I think is locked in here. Everybody else, I think, is kind of flexible, and they could be in danger of missing out here.
AJ, I got to ask you before we go on to the next club about Jack Eichel's situation. I heard rumblings that there were teams expressing interest in him, despite the fact that he has still got to go through some surgical procedure in order to get himself right with the wonky neck that he's dealing with. And there's still no real conclusion about which direction that's going to go. But have you heard anything at your end? And further to that, would you recommend stashing him, if you could, in fantasy formats? I think if you've got a way to find a spot in your reserves or injured reserves, that this guy needs to be there if he hasn't been plucked in your fantasy pools. I can't imagine that he'd be available in too many, but if he is, I would snap him up and just stash him and say, someday this guy's going to come back to hockey and be one of the best players in the league.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything different than that. I mean, I would imagine that a team that was seriously interested in training for Eichel would be willing to let him have the surgery that he wants. That seems to be the linchpin here with Buffalo, is that they want to go one route, he wants to go another. So, yeah, I would imagine that would be step one to clearing a trade, because obviously you don't want to give up the pieces you would need to get a Jack Eichel and then have him say, well, if you're not going to let me do it, I'm not going to play, right? So that's piece one. As far as stashing him, look, at this point, when you consider, like, the surgery hasn't happened, the trade hasn't been finalized, like, I would honestly only consider stashing him if your league has an IR spot. Like, I don't know that you want to waste. So I'm in a league with a couple other people. Paul, I think you're in a similar version of the same league.
Yeah.
That doesn't have an IR spot. There are a good number of reserve spots, but I don't know that I would keep Jack Eichel sitting around just because of the uncertainty. Like, you don't really have any good idea how long he'll be out, if and when he has the surgery, and what team he'll be playing for. So if you have an IR spot, certainly it makes sense to use that and stick him in there. But if you don't, I might consider letting him go, to be honest. Now, that is only in a redraft format, obviously. If you are in a dynasty format, like, don't go out and drop Jack Eichel today, because obviously, you know, this season may be a wash with him, but you'll get him back at some point, and then he's certainly got some high value there.
Well, and I expect a couple other guys, and I'm going to ask you about one when a certain team comes up in the second half of our show. AJ, who's on the IR, he'll be out for a couple of months, and you probably have a different opinion and a different answer. I know I acted on it. We'll get to that a little bit later. So there's a carrot that I'll dangle for you when we talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins and Evgeny Malkin a little bit later in the show. But for now, let's swing into the Carolina Hurricanes. And this is a team that they have whoever counts the shots on goal in Carolina is doing this team a real solid, because every year they're among the league leaders, if not the league leader. That shot clock is just on super spin mode in Carolina, and that juices up some of the shots on goal totals for this group here. A couple of the guys that are going to be leading the attack offensively on the first power play, and Andrei Svechnikov, this guy, he's a super sniper on the left wing. Sebastian Aho, very underrated in the middle of the ice as their number one center. Then they mix it up a little bit, AJ. Instead of putting Teravainen on the right wing to complete this line, he's playing a point position, and they're giving Vinny Trocheck, another smooth puck handler, a chance to play up front with Aho. That's their top two centers on this unit. And then an enigmatic choice for their power play point man, and that's Tony DeAngelo, who has been much maligned in this space and others for off-ice activities, but he's got talent, and that's what earned him the right to be the power play quarterback. I wonder how many people are buying into him. Let me start there with you. Are you buying on Tony DeAngelo as the point man here?
I'm going to say no at this point. I would like to obviously see a game or two and see what the minutes break down with him, really, because you look at their regular, the regular depth chart right now, we've got them penciled in with Ian Cole as like the third pairing. So I guess the question is, is he only going to average like 15, 16 minutes of five on five ice time, and then they'll juice him up on the power play to the point where he's out there for almost a full 2 minutes to kind of make that up? Or are they just going to be dividing the minutes a little more evenly that it doesn't really matter? And then, what are his actual minutes on the power play? And I'm not sold that he's going to be like the number one power play quarterback throughout the year. So I'm a little hesitant on him right now. I will say, if you're looking in terms of DFS options, like, anytime he gets playing with Svechnikov, Teravainen, Aho, Trocheck, like, you kind of have to consider utilizing whoever's in that spot. And we do have DeAngelo there right now. So that's kind of my take on that situation. But I'll dive us into Chicago there. And this, again, this is another one where most of the spots on this top power play unit are going to be pretty well cemented. Obviously, Patrick Kane, Jonathan Taves aren't going anywhere. Seth Jones will quarterback that number one unit. I think the DeBrincat is pretty much solid there. So maybe Tyler Johnson is the one iffy guy in that spot. But they're also utilizing him right now in that first line role. And so, if him and Kane and DeBrincat can start gelling on that first line, obviously Tyler Johnson new to the team this year, I think you would want to continue doing that on the power play as well. So while I'll say he's maybe my most questionable guy there in that first unit, I don't think he's in that risk of losing it. Paul, I don't know if you see anybody that could maybe challenge Tyler Johnson for that number one group.
Well, I'm also worried about the situation with Jonathan Taves. I'm thrilled to see he's back in the lineup, but we don't know what we're going to get out of him after he missed a whole season, AJ. So for me, there's a question mark beside his name as well until I see if he can return back to his usual form. If he doesn't, I think Kirby Dach is a suspect that could go up to the top line. And also Dominic Kubalik and Henrik Borgstrom even can maybe be a factor on that top unit. But Kubalik should be a guy that might be gets the first look on the left wing if Taves falters in any way offensively in that mix. But a guy who should be picked up at the high end of most draft boards when you're talking about defensemen, Seth Jones is clearly the go-to guy on the back end of this power play. And I think he's in for a tremendous season as a quarterback behind a potent group of forwards that they can put out there. AJ, I'm going to go back to the Calgary Flames. We leapt over them accidentally, but we will fill that gap now by talking about familiar faces that dot the landscape here in terms of their key offensive weapons on the first power play. Matthew Tkachuk, I hope this youngster has his head on right, because it didn't end very well for him last year. Kind of lost his cool and lost his focus in the playoffs, was down on the team. But by all accounts, he's come with a better attitude, and he'll be the leader of this team on the ice. Again, he has to be. And he'll be on that left wing on the top power play beside familiar partners Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau. Elias Lindholm is a guy who will be playing top 6 minutes regularly, and the forward who will jump back to a point position on the blue line. But the point man on the power play from the defenseman position is Rasmus Anderson. He has never held this role before with any degree of success. It was Mark Giordano's spot, but Giordano's moved on to Seattle, as we all know, to captain that squad. So Anderson is a guy who inherits that role, and if he succeeds, you can see a real spike in his ownership and value that is not there at the start of the season. He's going to have to earn that spot and stay there in that role. Otherwise, maybe a guy like Noah Hanifin challenges him for that responsibility.
I would absolutely agree there, Paul. I do think Hanifin is the number one candidate to step in there. Maybe if he got off to a good start, maybe a guy like Juuso Välimäki could be an option as well. It's not something he's done at the NHL level yet, but he's still kind of working his way. You know, he played 49 games last season, so has just started to become a full-time NHL level guy. So I apologize to the Calgary Flames fans there for having skipped over your club. But I'll take us to Columbus now. Hopefully that's in the right order here, Paul.
Yep.
So for them, I would say there's probably only, I guess I would say only two names that I think are 100% guaranteed to be on the number one power play, and that's Patrick Laine and Zach Werenski. Laine has obviously got the huge cannon of a shot. I would compare what he does on the power play similar to Alexander Ovechkin. Obviously not nearly as successful, at least not at this point in his career. But Laine does kind of a similar thing. He manages to find an opening right about the slot and really can fire one home. Werenski obviously taking over full-time as the number one quarterback. He's done it a little bit in the past, but full-time with the departure of Seth Jones. From there, right now we've got Jacob Voracek, Boone Jenner, and Oliver Bjorkstrand as the guys, but obviously, Max Domi is in the mix, Jack Roslovic. So I do think probably the maybe, you know, quote unquote forward spots, if you will, are a little more up for grabs here in Columbus.
At least they have options, though, AJ. You mentioned that second unit, Max Domi, Jack Roslovic. You can add Gustav Nyquist to the mix, I think, even. He's a couple of years removed from being a top scorer on his teams in the past, but he was out with injury much of last season as well. So a bit of a question mark at the get-go, but I think he's a guy who's primed for upward mobility in the power play depth chart if he stays healthy. He's that good a player, and he should be in the mix offensively. Of course, people are looking for a rebound from Patrick Laine. He has had a big-time drop-off in the last year in terms of the scoring expectations that we have had for him. He was supposed to be up there. He was drafted number two behind Austin Matthews. I don't think there's anybody in the world who would say that he's the equal of Matthews anymore, but that was certainly a talking point a couple of years ago that I remember very well. But Laine is a super skilled player. He may have already scored the goal of the season, AJ, in exhibition. I don't know if you caught the end-to-end rush that he scored, a beautiful goal lifting the puck into the top corner after going 200 feet from one end of the ice to the other. He's that skilled and that capable. It's just a matter of where his head's at. And by all accounts, it's a better starting point than it was during any part of the season for him last year. So I hope for his sake that he does recapture the trajectory that he had earlier in his career and leads this team offensively. They're going to need him to do so. I have a question mark around Jacob Voracek, AJ. As you know, we talked about that in our preseason preview of this team. And I wonder if he is lost a stride or lost anything offensively, he'll be probably the first to shoot a drop from that first power play unit. Up next, we go to one of the league's most potent clubs, maybe the most potent club offensively in the entire league, and that's the Colorado Avalanche. And of course, they have one of the signature trios up front offensively in Landeskog, Rantanen, and McKinnon. McKinnon is listed out of the lineup at the moment, but he'll be back sooner than later with any no doubt at all about his ability to lead this team offensively. So without him in the mix, though, they're going to look for Nazem Kadri and JT Compher to fill a role in the power play. And then on the back end, Cale Makar should be in contention for one of the top point getters among all defensemen in the league, and he'll partner likely with maybe a guy with the best hands outside of that top line, and that's Andrei Burakovsky. AJ, what do you think about the group in this mix? I'll also mention Valery Nichushkin is a guy who will have that net front presence on a second unit and could have some value there as well.
Yeah, obviously this unit in flux right now. JT Compher's spot on that top group is going to last maybe one more game. Nathan McKinnon will obviously come back and reclaim that spot. Of course, they have to worry about losing Gabriel Landeskog as well after today's announcement that he'll be having a hearing with the Department of Player Safety for his boarding hit there, which I've seen some dumb plays, Paul, but like that one, I just don't know what you're thinking. Like, I know the guy's playing the puck, but he's on one knee. Like, you really had to like rear back and like slam him? Like, that one just kind of boggled my mind. I don't ever recall having seen, indications or bad plays by Gabriel Landeskog that would indicate that he's, a dirty player. So I'm certainly not suggesting that. I think he just wasn't thinking on that play at all. And I would suspect maybe a one-game suspension for him. Probably not too much more, but certainly something to watch. You mentioned Nichushkin, and I think he'd be the leading candidate to move up there if they are without Landeskog and McKinnon. And they might even move him up there if Landeskog is out, but they do have McKinnon back, because I think JT Compher, maybe not exactly the best guy to be having on a number one power play unit there. In Dallas, looks, like we'll see a bit of what we're kind of used to here. Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, Ryan Sutter, and Miro Heiskanen as the, I'll call it the 1A group here, along with Denis Gurianov. And then the 1B, you're looking at Radulov, Rupe Hintz, Joe Pavelski, John Klingberg, and youngster Jacob Pettersson. This is one where I think the minutes you're going to see are pretty even. And that's intentional by dividing up, you know, kind of your star guys here. I think if you were going to go like fully offensive number one power play, you'd probably go Ben Sagan, Radulov, Pavelski, and Heiskanen, or maybe Klingberg. I think you could make an argument either way there. So it's interesting to see that they're kind of dividing the talents here to give them, you know, two more evenly matched power plays. I think it's maybe unique, you know, kind of a unique setup from what we're used to.
Well, and the thing that I noticed is the defense pairing here on the power play. It looks like Sutter and Heiskanen are one of the rare team-ups on the back end that actually use two defensemen on the first power play. So that's something to look forward to. And Sutter, in his new digs, he has been a point-getter and a big-time minute-eater wherever he's been in his career, mostly in Nashville, I suppose. And I expect him to have the same profile here. So that's a pretty nice 1-2 punch on the back end. Two defensemen who should both top the 40-point mark. Don't be shy about plugging them both in sometimes if they get a really nice matchup in DFS play. But Gurianov, along with veterans Ben and Sagan, he's a guy that I look for to be a trigger man on that power play. And they got the old man that you really like, Joe Pavelski, on the second unit. I could see him getting first power play minutes as well. And you can't ignore Alexander Radulov. He'll move up and down this roster as well. A guy that they can plug and play on any unit and really brings a physical presence. And he'll be that key net presence that I look for on power plays that gets a lot of those goals from within 6 feet around the net. So there's some value in taking a look at a bunch of players here in Dallas. Over in Detroit, you know, there's a lot of fantasy players that might put a big X through this team. AJ, they won't be one of the better teams in the league, but they do have some individual skill that is worth noting. Particularly their captain, Dylan Larkin, is a guy that I have a lot of time for. He could be a guy that gets 70 plus points on the year, and he'll be featured on the first string power play. And along with him, Tyler Bertuzzi, those are going to be two guys that get a lot of action in that first power play unit. It's the third spot that is up for grabs. And Adam Hurdy is penciled in to that role right now. And then we got Nick Leddy and Lucas Raymond on the back end. What do you think about this group?
Well, I think there's, you know, as you said, there's, you know, not a lot of opportunity, I think, you know, to really utilize a lot of these guys. I think Dylan Larkin, as you said, Bertuzzi, obviously. But, you know, I don't expect the team is going to do a lot here this year, as you kind of alluded to. And so from that standpoint, you know, the groups will shuffle around. I think you're going to see a lot of youngsters like Lucas Raymond get opportunities here because why not, right? Might as well. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting one, I think, to kind of watch. And there are going to be a few opportunities throughout the year. You know, if Detroit's fresh and they're playing a team that's on a back-to-back, or they are playing somebody else that's a little more evenly matched with them, I do think there are a few opportunities, but certainly you'll have to pick and choose your spots there. One team you don't necessarily have to pick and choose your spots every night is the Edmonton Oilers. This first group, pretty much going to be the same group all year, and I would imagine you're talking about a group that'll eat up most of the 2 minutes on a power play here. You've got Zach Hyman, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Leon Draisaitl, Connor McDavid, and Tyson Barrie as the number one unit. If there's a name that's maybe most likely to be questionable in that, it's probably Hyman, but I say that with a grain of salt. I really don't think there's going to be anybody that really challenges this five-pack for opportunities here. Unless, I don't know, Paul, do you see it any differently there?
Well, there's one name that I'll add to the mix, but certainly Zach Hyman off the opening nights fit in like a glove on that power play. He got a layup, absolutely layup, from the edge of the crease where he'll be on every power play that he plays to get an easy goal on a pass from Draisaitl the other night. So it's a good look and a good spot for him. He's played it before in Toronto with some degree of success as well. So I think he's going to be just fine in that mix. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, up front with Draisaitl, McDavid. Look, that's three former number one draft picks, and lots of skill there too. Tyson Barrie made his bones. Let's be very frank. He was very appropriate to fit into this group with a cannon of a shot, adding to the mix here, and really a threat that, you know, McDavid's on the point with him. So you know Barry's going to get a lot of open ice to unleash that shot. And he did it with great ferocity last year and great results. So I expect that to continue as well. If I could name one guy that might move up into this mix, it's Jesse Puljujärvi. This guy's done a stunning turnaround for me, AJ, since he moved back from Finland. It looks like he really matured into a much more effective player, uses his size very well, and still has the good hands to go with it. So maybe he and his Hyman could flip-flop. I think, though, that the likes of Derek Ryan and Tyler Yamamoto, maybe even Evan Bouchard, are going to vie for second-line minutes. And not, if they want to go to a two-defenseman look, don't sleep on a Darnell Nurse. He could fit in on the point on the power play if they decide to put McDavid up front at center and maybe drop Hyman. They will keep the two defensemen look, and Darnell Nurse scored a pile of goals last year, so he's very capable offensively as well. So a wealth of options at the top end of the Edmonton roster. They should have one of the best power plays in the league, clearly, with the two big-time scorers up front leading the way. In Florida, Sam Bennett made a big splash with this club last year, AJ, and I expect that to continue. He's going to get top 6 minutes here and top 5 minutes on the power play, along with Sam Reinhart and Jonathan Huberdeau, Aaron Ekblad and Alexander Barkov on the points. Alexander Barkov, of course, their captain and number one center, will play that point position on the power play, and along with Ekblad, gives him a real nice look at the back end. A lot of people are expecting Ekblad to produce big scoring totals this season, AJ. Keith Yandel's not there anymore, so he's going to get more minutes on the back end in these prime roles, and so you could see a spike in his numbers that was not there in the last couple of seasons because his running mate is no longer in the franchise. So the second unit, though, a couple of question marks for me. Owen Tippett is a guy who hasn't really proven to me that he's a top six player in this league. He's had a couple of nice short runs. They're banking on him holding onto that role all season long. That'll be his challenge. But at center on the second unit is Joe Thornton. And I like Joe Thornton. What can you say? The guy's a sure Hall of Famer, but in his early 40s, lost a step. And, you know, apart from the power play, I don't know what kind of value he has offensively on this club at this stage in his career, but they've got him penciled in on the second-line power play. And sure, from time to time, he'll be a contributor there. He was in Toronto as well. I just think they have some better options to mix in, and maybe even a guy like Carter Verhaeghe or Frankie Vetrano fills in among the forward ranks. Patrick Hornquist, another guy that you know very well from his time in Pittsburgh, going to fit that net front presence. And if they figure that they want to have more of that, they have two good looks with Bennett and Hornquist in those roles.
Yeah, I definitely think Hornquist is probably the most likely candidate to slide up for one of the Sams, I'll say, whether it be Bennett or Reinhart here, just because he is that super pest on the power play and is not afraid to just stand there when, you know, a guy like Aaron Ekblad's firing off a shot from the point. But yeah, other than that, boy, I agree with everything you said, so I'll dive in to the Los Angeles Kings here. A little bit of a different look here, I think, in some ways. You know, Dustin Brown, Anze Kopitar, Drew Doughty, names they're kind of used to, but Victor Arvidsson will get an opportunity with the first group, and then Vladimir Tkachev will be the other defenseman. I would guess that's probably tentative at best. I would think maybe they'll move, you know, an Alex Iafallo, a Philip Deneau into that spot as well to give him a little more offensive bump with that group. But yeah, I mean, kind of the same names that we're used to. Obviously, Andreas Athanasiou, when he is healthy, he'll be a factor on this power play. And I wouldn't be surprised, you know, it's about a month away, but whenever they get Quentin Byfield back, he could certainly be in the mix here for some power play opportunities as well.
Yeah, they've stuck with some old hands here. Three of the six positions for players that date back to their Stanley Cup years of success. Drew Doughty, linchpin on the power play. There, Vladimir Tkachev, you mentioned, he's one of two wingers that they brought in to bolster the offensive ranks, and he'll be playing that point position beside Doughty in the early going. But if that fails, you can bet a guy like Alec Diafalo will be plugged into that role very soon. Arthur Kaliev is another guy who is a youngster who fits into the new top nine forwards here in Los Angeles, and he's penciled in as a second-line participant. Maybe he and Takev will flip-flop roles if one succeeds over the other one. Philippe Deneau was never really involved in the power play in Montreal, but he's penciled in as a second power play guy. I would suggest that his greatest value is winning the draws. He's one of the better guys in the league at it, and there's no better way than starting a power play than winning the faceoff and keeping the puck in the offensive zone rather than losing 20 seconds when you lose the draw. So that might be his biggest value, and then he hangs around long enough to pick up some points. But you're talking about a guy who only had 5 goals last year, so I don't know about putting the puck in the net part for Deneau as being enough of a play to get me to draft this guy in many formats. In Minnesota, AJ, they too have a couple of familiar guys in the top line role on the power play. Kevin Fiala manning the point, normally a winger, obviously, and he's partnered with Jared Spurgeon, who has the big shot. It's great to have defensemen that can really flip that puck at the net with, you know, 95 to 100 mile an hour, and this Spurgeon is one that can do it. Not every team has that value. So that's his attraction to this power play unit, as well as being the power play quarterback from the defense position. Kirill Kaprizov, fresh off an outstanding rookie season, is a guy that will be the linchpin of this offense, and he'll be one of the forwards along with Joel Eriksson-Ek. Those two really formed a very nice partnership. And, of course, I like to mention Matt Zuccarello, one of the best power playmaking wingers that exists in the National Hockey League, rounding out that unit. But then they have options on the second line that are worth mentioning, particularly Matt Dumba, for me, is another guy who fits the mold of a power play quarterback who can really fire it, and Marcus Foligno, an alternate to a net front presence here. AJ, any fillers or thoughts in Minnesota? And if not, then you can take us into Montreal.
No, I really don't. You know, Jonas Brodin could be one guy that I see maybe moving up, but other than that, I don't have a lot of additions there to your comments on the Wild. And for Montreal, I think we're going to see a pretty set first group here. Brendan Gallagher, Nick Suzuki, who just signed a pretty hefty 8-year, $63 million contract a couple days ago. A little surprised by that one. Paul, I'll kick it to you in a minute, have you comment on that. But for me, a little surprised just at the length. You know, it was an 8-year extension. He's 22, so you figure it kicks him when he's 23. He's going to be 31 by the time that thing wraps up. So, yeah, just a little surprised for a young player at just 22 to be signing a max 8-year extension. But back to the power play, you know, Tyler Toffoli being the other offensive guy, Cole Caulfield, and then Jeff Petry. I think that one's pretty set. Like, maybe Josh Anderson could challenge here. I like this second group, if I'm being totally honest. Yoel Armia, Christian Dvorak, Josh Anderson, Chris Weidman, who had a really good year in the KHL, and then Jonathan Drouin. Like, I like this second group a lot. I'm just not sure that any of them offers enough to move into the first spot. So I guess that would be my two questions for you, Paul. Do you see anybody that could move on to the number one unit? And what were your thoughts about Suzuki's big-time deal?
Yeah, I think Montreal may have spent more than they needed to on Suzuki, to be quite honest. 41 points last year in 56 games played. I don't think that's his ceiling. I think you mentioned he's only 22 years old. They're expecting the partnership between him and Caulfield to really bloom and blossom. But neither one of them touches near 6 feet when you measure these guys in terms of height. And it's still not a small man's game here in the NHL. You've got to have some size going for you. I know Suzuki can stick handle around me in a phone booth. There's no question about that. But I still have some question marks about what is this guy's ceiling. Can he be a point-of-game player in this league? I'm not really sure about that. But they're certainly going to pay him like that over the next several years. I think they're paying in anticipation of that achievement. And I don't know if I would have done that as a GM of the club. You also mentioned, is there any other second-line winger or player that I'd like to see threaten the front-line unit? I think they're certainly hoping that Christian Dvorak develops into a scoring center. He has not shown that beyond the ability to score 18 goals in a single season in this league yet. So I have some question marks about that. Of course, he had an outstanding junior career, but he played alongside Marner and Tkachuk as well, and I think I could have thrived in that setup, AJ, quite frankly. But the two bigger guys on that second unit up front are the guys that I think could certainly get more power play time. That's Joel Armia. I keep talking about the net front presence. I'd rather have him there almost than a Brendan Gallagher. I think Gallagher is certainly a guy who's willing to mix it up, but he's a third-line player. I think Armia, to me, has more size and has some scoring ability that can be that presence. But even more than those two, why isn't Josh Anderson playing on the top line? I think this guy's their best power forward, and he's relegated to second power play minutes. I don't quite get that, AJ. So I think that's a guy that I think could see a move to the first unit before too long. Up next, we're going to talk about the New Jersey Devils, and they are a team that I think a lot of people are wondering, when is the switch going to be flipped here and some of their guys really achieve the stardom that's expected of them? I'm talking about specifically Nico Hischier and Jack Hughes. Hughes, for his part, AJ, is dealing with a day-to-day designation injury-wise. Doesn't look like he'll be out very long, but those two guys are supposed to drive this offense when they're on regular shift, and they should be able to really run an effective power play with the skill that they bring to the first unit here. Pavel Zacha should be one of the trigger men that they look for big production out of. And then Thomas Tatar, formerly of Montreal, he's had success as a power play specialist in the past. This looks like a great spot for him. And they have another one of those special linchpin-type defensemen in Dougie Hamilton, who signed big dollars to come over to New Jersey and man the point and maybe fire up this offense from that defense position. On the second unit, the one guy whose name leaps out to me is Yegor Sharangovich. He came from nowhere to be a factor last season, AJ, and he was a factor offensively, and so that's a trigger man on the second unit here that I look for big production out of in New Jersey.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the big acquisition of Dougie Hamilton should, in theory, really revamp this number one power play unit. And honestly, I think it could do some good things for PK Subban as well. You know, being with the second unit, I think will afford him maybe not the prime penalty killers necessarily, and I think it could help improve his power play numbers as well in his production. So I think both these guys could benefit from those kind of new roles there. In Nashville, a little bit of the young and the old here. You've got, Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, Roman Josi, and even Mikael Granlund. So maybe mostly the old here. But Eli Tolvanen is the one guy in that top unit that is obviously not been around nearly as long as some of the rest. I like him on that group, especially, a little bit faster, a little speedier. But I do think his hold on that spot should be, considered tenuous at best. I think both Luke Kunin or Matt Duchene could push him for that spot. And honestly, if they, depending who they're playing against, if they want to go a more defensive setup, that's not really Tolvanen's game. So Matthias Ekholm could be an option there as well. So he's definitely not cemented there. The other four guys, I do think maybe if he got off to like the best year he's had in 3-4 years, like maybe Matt Duchene could challenge Mikael Granlund here. But for the most part, I don't see anybody else of that four pack having to face any serious challenges for power play minutes.
I'm glad you mentioned Duchene and Ekholm. Ekholm just signed a long-term deal, and he's getting more money, around $6 million a year. He was on one of the better team-friendly contracts for a defenseman of some value for the last several years. So now he's getting paid more what he's appropriate for him. And he moves up the depth chart now that a couple of departures on the blue line. So he's factoring more into the power play expectations. But Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson could flip-flop here. Maybe they even play together. They had some success playing together in the past. And so I look for them to line up maybe together on the first unit if Granlund doesn't work out, or Tolvanen and maybe the odd man out. I'd pencil Duchene into that top unit really quickly. The New York Islanders, AJ, this is a team that a lot of people have high expectations based on the fact that they've had a couple of very nice playoff runs that were halted by the eventual Cup champions in the last 2 years. That's how good they've been. And, people think they're a defense-first team, but they have some really good names that they can ice on a power play. One of the specialists that draws into the mix on a full-time basis going forward this year is Kyle Palmieri. Matthew Barzal, maybe their signature offensive piece, and Anders Lee, their captain, back to full strength and full health. That's a pretty nice top line. Noah Dobson, we've been waiting for him to take the next step, and they're waiting for him to run things on this power play, and he will be doing it if all things go well, alongside Oliver Wahlstrom on the back end of that first unit. Second line types who will be in the mix are no slouches either when you consider Josh Bailey, another one of those wonderful playmaking wingers that is a rarity in the league. And then they've got Brock Nelson. I said he's a shoot-first guy on our DK show earlier today, and I'll back that up by saying he's a guy who's been a 30-plus goal scorer in this league, and I think he can get back into that range with the return of the 82-game schedule. Anthony Beauvillier, another guy who has all the skill in the world. That's a very formidable top six guys that they can put at the forward ranks in the power play. And then they can even put a guy like Ryan Pulock, who is their best defensive defenseman, but also capable of double-digit goal scoring to fill out that second unit as well.
Yeah, I'm at a loss for why Oliver Wahlstrom's on that first unit, if I'm being totally honest with you. There's just so many other guys. Like, I mean, I guess, you know, the upside is that the second unit is actually really good when you know, all the guys that you named are quality. So maybe they're going to do a little bit more of an even split in terms of the power play minutes, and that's kind of what they're thinking there. But, like, right off the bat, I think any one of Bailey, Nelson, Bolivier, Peugeot, like, any one of those guys makes more sense on the first unit, in my mind, than Oliver Wahlstrom. But, again, if you're trying to split the two units up a little bit more evenly, maybe that's the look there. In New York, it's, again, probably, you know, maybe three guys on the top unit here that are surefire locks. I think most of them have a pretty good hold of their spots, but the three locks for me are Kreider, Zibanejad, and obviously Adam Fox, who just had a fantastic year last year. Nearly half his points came on the power play. I would expect him to continue doing that this year as well. I wouldn't list Ryan Strome and Artemi Panarin as absolute locks, and it's not because I don't think they can produce on the power play or somehow they might, you know, struggle. But again, if you want to divide the workload and or give some of your up-and-comers, you know, looks on the number one unit, you've got Alexis Lafreniere and Kaapo Kakko, like, waiting on that second unit. So I wouldn't be surprised to see either of those guys move up periodically just to see a few more minutes with the number one group there. And then Jacob Trouba will for sure be locked in as the quarterback on the second group. He's not going to take over from Fox as that number one. There's just no way. His numbers are good, and he's very capable of doing it, but you just look at what Adam Fox did last year. You'd be insane to take him off the number one power play.
Well, and I think I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on Artemi Panarin, and this is their signature offensive piece, in my opinion. AJ and we may agree to disagree here, but I think he's going to be a guy who winds on the top 10 scorers in the league. So I think you can add him as a guy that's a real fixture for me on the New York power play. That remains to be seen how it turns out, but he's definitely a guy that I would pencil in. They're waiting for Lafreniere and Kakko to take the next steps. And I know that's what you're thinking about. Where do these guys fit in? Can they get room on that top line? If they do take the next steps, they might push Strome and Kreider out of the way, but they aren't going to touch Panera, in my opinion. And Jacob Trouba's a guy they signed for big bucks a while back from Winnipeg to be the linchpin on the power play. That really never worked out, AJ, but he's still there as a viable option for me. If something happens to Fox, it would take an injury to knock him out of the first power play unit, all the way that things line up at the moment. And look, the Leafs are going to go into Ottawa tonight, and they don't have to play against Brady Tkachuk, but this is a team that still can ice a pretty nice-looking power play when you consider the skilled players that they can throw out there. Some of these guys have taken the next step that I talked about with other youngsters. I'm thinking about you, Drake Batherson. He had an outstanding year last season for Ottawa, AJ, and I think he is ready to continue that as one of the key guys up front. He'll partner with Josh Norris at center, and then Connor Brown, one of the more industrious two-way players in the league, who's really upped his offensive game since he moved to Ottawa. Perennial 20-goal scorer. He might threaten 30 if he can stick with this unit, because it features some pretty nice point men here. You consider that the winger and maybe the most skilled player on this team, Tim Stützle, is going to be on 1 point, along with Thomas Chabot, one of the best minute-eating defensemen with offensive skills in the entire NHL. He should be a guy that's a lock for 50-plus points and will be playing a lot of the power play minutes as the power play quarterback here. And I wonder if they have anybody to threaten each of these guys on the second unit.
Well, I don't know if anybody from the second unit would necessarily challenge, but obviously Tkachuk is going to be on that top unit. Josh Norris just feels like the no-brainer odd man out here, in my opinion. You know, Tyler Ennis has played plenty of power play minutes over his career, so he could certainly be an option as well to push for more there. He kind of fell out of that role with Edmonton. You know, we talked about how stacked they were this year, and so when he was with them last year, he didn't really get an opportunity to fill that role. But really, that's, you know, like the only year he's had pretty much no, you know, his time with Edmonton is pretty much when he's had no power play minutes to really speak for. So in Philadelphia, the Flyers will have, you know, again, kind of some similar names, a couple new faces here. Sean Couturier, Travis Konecny, Claude Giroux, James Van Riemsdyk, all those guys make sense and are locked in, I think, on the number one group. I do think Keith Yandle, who is new to their power play, obviously, after joining from the offseason, I do think he probably is the most obvious choice on the number one unit there. You know, Ryan Ellis could be a challenger for that, though. You know, going into the start of the season, I think you use Yandle. But obviously, you got to see something. And if the production drops off, you know, really for Yandle at all, you know, you can easily switch that. And I don't think it'll be a huge dip in production. You know, even last year in the season where Yandle was kind of on the outs with Florida, but not really, like, they still used him. He only averaged 17:15 of ice time last year, but 4:27 of that came on the power play. And he scored 18 of 27 points with the man advantage. Like, he's clearly found a niche here and is going to bring that, I think, to Philadelphia and give them arguably maybe their best power play quarterback that they've had for a while.
And further to that, AJ, Ryan Ellis is not a bad 1B option to running a power play. He's been a big minute eater in this league, moves over to Philadelphia, and a bit of a made-over defense here. They've added a lot of experience in those two guys, and a look for both of them to factor in to the power play here. Ivan Provorov is a third defenseman who will be featured on the power play. He would have been first line if neither of these two guys was around, but I think still this could be a unit that you could see two defensemen at the back end and run things that way. The youngster who could be a factor if JVR flounders in any way, shape, or form, because Father Time might be catching up to him a little bit. Joel Farabee's a guy to keep an eye on, and he will be a guy who plays that bumper or net front position in the Flyers' power play and should benefit from one of the more potent attacks in hockey. AJ, we're going to step aside now for a word from our sponsors before we come back and hear what you have to say about the way the Penguins line up. So let's take a short break here, and we'll be back to you. You've been listening to RotoWire's podcast with Statsman and AJ.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/BlueWire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Okay, we're back, but we have 10 more teams to go through before we talk to you about the DFS portion of our show. But AJ, before we do that, I want you to talk about our sponsors at Owner's Box.
Yeah, are you looking for a new way to play fantasy sports this season? Owner's Box offers two game types, tournament salary cap and head-to-head live drafts. As a bonus, all new players receive a $25 bonus when they deposit $10 or more on the platform. Be sure to check out Owner's Box new Super Flex Salary Cap game, a revolutionary new way to play fantasy football that brings a strategic new alternative to the traditional season-long formats in daily fantasy games. The Super Flex Salary Cap format, available only on Owner's Box, removes the kicker and defensive position slots and focuses only on offensive players. Users will build their 9-player lineup while staying under the $50,000 salary cap. Large prize pools will be available throughout the NFL season. The super flex position, the main differentiator of the contest, gives the users the option to select an additional quarterback, running back, wide receiver, or tight end. Ultimately, it makes the quarterback a premium position versus other fantasy formats. And don't worry, listeners, Owner's Box will have NHL contests live on the site for the start of the season. Play the Owner's Box salary cap contest for free. Use promo code DREW9, that's D-R-E-W 9, for a free $10 entry into the Sunday-only 50K salary cap contest.
All right, before we continue, AJ, you got one more promo to do, and that's to talk about us and how people can get a hold of us during the course of the next week.
Yeah, absolutely. We encourage you to send your comments and questions that you may have about fantasy hockey, about your teams. Really, you know, if you have DFS questions, season-long questions, or just hockey questions in general, you can reach me, AJ Scholes, on Twitter at AJScholes24. That's AJScholes24. And you can follow Paul, the Statsman, at Statsman22. That one's pretty straightforward, Paul. I'm not going to spell that one out for our listeners. I think they can get that one. We'll be happy to share the best questions that we get on Twitter on our upcoming pods as well.
All right, partner, it's time to talk about your favorite club. Two key pieces missing in Crosby and Malkin. So in the interim, The way they line it up is going to be Jake Gensel. He's also nicked up a little bit, though, day-to-day. Jeff Carter, who looks like he's been shot out of the cannon in the early going. And Kasperi Kapanen rounding out the top of three forward spots. Brian Rust is a guy who normally is a forward, but playing that point position alongside veteran Chris Letang, who's been a linchpin here since we've been doing the show together, AJ, in terms of Pittsburgh power play analysis. They have other options on the second unit. Prime among them for me is Jason Zucker, who will fill in if Gunsel is not ready to go. Marcus Pettersson, a viable option along with John Marino to spell Chris Letang from time to time. But really, these guys are hoping that Sydney can get back into the lineup sooner rather than later. Any time frame on him? And certainly, if you have any opinion on Malkin, I have just stashed him in one of those reserve spots, bench spots in my season-long pool. I don't care how long it's going to take for him to get back. I expect him to be better than a lot of guys who are available players right now.
It's funny. I assumed when I did that it was fandom bias. So I'm glad to hear somebody else did that, Paul, to stash Gino there. I mean, so here's the difference between him and Eichel. Like, one, he's had the surgery already. We have a clear time frame of when he's going to be back. And it's only going to be, I say only, it's going to be, 2 months. So start basically December-ish. So you have kind of a clear idea of how long you need to get by without him. We don't really have that picture with Eichel. Like, we don't have a good idea of how long he'll be out. It depends which surgery. You also, when Malkin comes back. Like, he's the number two center, and he's on the number one power play. Like, you know that absolutely. Eichel, you assume he'll be the number one center somewhere, but I guess you don't know that for sure. Heard rumblings of him being in Boston. So, okay, in Boston, he's the number two center, right? So you don't really know, like, how he might fit on a team when you don't know what team he's going in. So it's that kind of uncertainty for me that makes the difference there. In terms of the power play look, my biggest, question that I have is what do they do when Malkin comes back, right? Like, Crosby comes back, Jeff Carter moves to the second unit. That's pretty straightforward. Evan Rodriguez is pretty much done on the power play. Maybe he could challenge Dominic Simon. Marcus Pettersson is really only on that second unit because Mike Matheson is out. He's really not going to push Letang, and nobody's going to challenge Letang for that spot. There's no question about it. So, the number one unit is going to be set here when Crosby comes back, but do you take Kasperi Kapanen or Brian Rust off when you get Gino back? And that's a big decision that Mike Sullivan's going to have to make. My initial gut reaction is that it's probably Brian Rust, despite how well he's looked. And then, maybe at that point, maybe they decide to not have two defensemen on that second unit and go with four forwards there just to find a way to get Rust into the lineup. But yeah, so as far as Gonzo, you mentioned the injury or the absence, it was COVID-related. He had tested positive, has been practicing with the team. The hope is that he'll be back up to full fitness and hopefully playing tonight for the Penguins faithful. But obviously, again, continue to monitor that. And Paul, you're absolutely right. Jason Zucker will slide into that top unit there if Gensel can't play. We'll move on to the San Jose Sharks here. And their group is a little weak, if I'm being completely honest. You've got Logan Couture, Eric Karlsson, Brent Burns. Looks like Alexander Barabanov and Rudolf Walsers as the other guys. I think Tomas Hertl, Kevin LeBanc can move in. But the reason I call this group a little weak is, like, Eric Karlsson just really has not done much of anything since coming over. I don't love having him. I've never loved having him and Brent Burns on the same line. I said that when, you can go back several years on our podcast shows and you'll hear me say I don't love adding Eric Karlsson when you already have a Brent Burns. Two heads aren't always better than one when it comes to your power play here. So, I just don't love this power play. Well, I don't know about you.
Yeah, I think separating them makes the most sense, but who do you take off that top unit there? Two of your big ticket items. So I think, like you, they erred when they put the two of them together on this roster in the first place. Barabanov, this guy's gone from a fourth liner in Toronto to a first line power play role in San Jose. That tells you how thin they are up front. Kevin LeBanc is a viable option for sure. Couture makes sense. So does Hurdle. But Evander Kane is the big question mark here. You wonder if and when they're ever going to get this guy back. If not, Rudy Balcer is another no-name addition to the front line of this power play. It should be one of the weakest in the league. It doesn't matter if they have two of the biggest tickets in the league manning the points on this power play. We're going to go to the Seattle franchise now and talk about this new team and how they might line up with a bunch of cast-offs from other teams. There's still some pretty good name recognition here, AJ. When I consider the likes of Jaden Schwartz and Jordan Eberle and Mark Giordano, these guys have played power play minutes in the earlier in their careers, so that's a good starting point. Then they add Jared McCann, who I have a lot of time for. I know you've got a lot of good things to say about him from his time in Pittsburgh. He seemed to be their Swiss Army knife. You could put him in anywhere from first line to third, left wing, center, right, didn't matter. He was always a good placeholder and a steady producer offensively as well. Ryan Donato is another guy that's going to be a trigger man up front. Beyond that, they have some alternates that would buy for time on most other teams as well. Vince Dunn is a guy who is looking to further his development, and he'd get a chance here to be the linchpin on the second power play unit from the defense position. And Yunus Donskoy is a very viable trigger man for me who could move up to the top unit in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, I think the other name to keep an eye on here is Alex Barry-Boulet. He's going to play tonight for the first time since Seattle grabbed him off of waivers. I think he could fit into this second unit here. But for the most part, I think the names you listed on the first one, Wenberg, Giordano, McCann, Schwartz, Eberle, like that's pretty much their first unit, right? Like there's not going to be too many challengers. Donskoy maybe, but obviously Giordano is going to quarterback that group. There's no getting around that, and I don't know why you would, given his experience there. In St. Louis, it's going to be Torrey Krug stepping into year two as their kind of number one guy here. Vladimir Tarasenko, Ryan O'Reilly, Pavel Buchnevich. I think Braden Schenn and Robert Thomas probably vying for the other spot there for this group. I would say Buchnevich comes in probably the odds-on favorite to be in the top group, but I wouldn't say he's a lock in the same way that I would maybe some other players. And then obviously David Perron, who's been around this team for quite a while, he could be a factor as well. So a number of names that could pair up with kind of that O'Reilly, Tarasenko, and Krug trio on the number one group here.
Yeah, and I wouldn't sleep on a guy like Justin Falk. This guy has made his way through the NHL career that he's enjoyed largely on the strength of a potent shot and a very good offensive presence from the back end. So he'll spell Krug maybe and maybe jump up ahead of Parayko on that second unit in St. Louis. With the Stanley Cup champs up next, we know they have a wealth of options to choose from offensively. The familiar names will be Kucherov, Point, Stamkos, and Hedman. The guy who has a bit of a sneaky additional value for me is Alex Killorn, not usually named with that group of four. So he's a guy that I hope you've picked up in your pools. Could be a real nice value play to round out the Tampa power play. Backing them up, Corey Perry over from Montreal. A fourth line presence on a regular shift, but definitely a good net front presence on a power play unit. He had some success there in the playoffs. And I figure if he gets onto this power play unit, he'll enjoy a similar run of success. He had a very nice exhibition schedule totaling four goals offensively to give a sense for what that might include and look like. And then the other guy that they're grooming to be 1B to a clear 1A in Hedman is Mikhail Sergachev.
Yeah, this is another one where I really like the second group. Maroon, Sorelli, Perry, like, you know, ton of talent there, ton of experience. But that first group just has to be on the ice for most of that power play, right? So I don't know how many minutes, or in some cases probably even seconds, that that some of the second group is going to get. And so that is going to be something to monitor, because, you know, like you said, Corey Perry, you know, net front, Sergachev has a great shot from the point and everything. But you're not taking Hedman, Kucherov, and Stamkos off the ice if you don't have to, right? So definitely going to be interesting to see as we get into a few more games how the breakdown works in terms of, you know, what sort of power play minutes everybody is getting here. You know, you look at the first game, they only had the one power play, and it's, you know, Hedman, Kaloran, Kucherov, Point, and Stamkos all on for a minute 30. And then the other group here got the other, you know, 27 seconds that it ended up being here. So I would expect that carries over into most two-minute power plays. And so definitely maybe not as high on their second group as I would maybe normally be, because I do like the players themselves that they have there. For the Toronto Maple Leafs, we've got, you know, obviously Austin Matthews being out for the first three games here changes how this first group looks, but they're certainly not lacking for options here. They still have, you know, John Tavares, William Nylander, Mitch Marner, Morgan Riley as the quarterback of this group, and then I think the Matthews fill-in is one that could be a little bit flexible. I've seen over a couple practices, they've had Nick Ritchie there, they've had Jason Spezza there. I wouldn't be surprised to see Pierre Engvall get a look as well. But Paul, I'll let you take it from there. If there's anything I've said that you disagree with or see differently on that.
You've named all the key guys that are going to factor in, AJ, maybe with one exception, Michael Bunting. And if Morgan Riley doesn't work out as the power play linchpin that he's been in the past, they want to give a different look. Maybe Rasmus Sandin figures in. But I want to spend a moment talking about Morgan Riley. The Leafs have gone the last couple of years, and they've let some pending free agents leave without any compensation. They better decide and figure out what they want to do with Riley, because I don't think there's a piece on the roster that can replace him and his role. I don't think Sandin's ready to step in to take the minutes that Riley does in all the situations that he does. So there's a couple of comparable contracts out there that have been signed most recently by defensemen, and Riley has to fit in somewhere into that mix, and they got to get that deal done. Otherwise, this guy's going to walk too, and that's not going to be a good look on this organization at a time when they have their window to be competitive. It's open right now, but if they lose that number one guy on the power play in the defense, that's a big hole to fill. Nick Ritchie has been an interesting addition to this club, and it goes hand in hand with what they're trying to do offensively, is more attacking the net, a net front presence in general. So you're seeing him stand right in front of the goalie. They got a goal off that play last night. Pierre Engvall looks like he's getting a long look in good offensive situations, and he was, for my money, the second best player on the ice next to Nylander in the Leafs' season opening win against Montreal. So they do have some options there, and they want to see Sandin take that next step in his development. Maybe that helps him with the Riley circumstance, but get Mo signed is my message to Leaf front office. The Vancouver Canucks, AJ, this is a team that a lot of people have a lot of high hopes for, and it's primarily because Elias Pettersson is back and healthy, and he will be alongside Bo Horvat. The 1-2 punch at the center is going to be featured on this power play. Alex Chiasson is in that net front position, so he could get a bushel full of goals too with those two guys feeding him on the extra man. And JT Miller, a fine playmaker from the back end, alongside Quinn Hughes, who is one of the better power play quarterbacks in the league. So it's a very nice-looking top line. And they have Connor Garland, who's a super pest, who will be that net front presence on the second line of the defense, of the power play, rather. And they have a second power play quarterback that they picked up in the offseason. And Oliver Ekman-Larsson is that guy. I thought he was going to be gone, so they got him back. And Nils Höglander is another feature on the back end, a forward who's going to be playing alongside Larsson. And so that's going to be an interesting look on the back end. Larsson, of course, played for years in Arizona as the power play quarterback there. So they've got two viable options between Hughes and Ekman-Larsson to run the power play here. That's a real luxury for Vancouver, I see.
Yeah, I don't really have any heavy additions there. You know, you look at, they had about 9.5 minutes of power play time in the first game. That main group that you mentioned took just under, you know, a little over 620 of that. So relatively evenly spread out, you know, there. So they're obviously taking the bulk of the workload, but not so much. But when you have that many minutes, you kind of have to spread it out. You can't really have your number one set of guys out there for the full 9 minutes of power play opportunities. So I got to share the wealth a little bit, I suppose. In Vegas, you've got a group that is pretty much, it looks like they maybe shuffled things up. I thought I was going to say pretty much the same. But right now we've got Evgeny Dadonov ahead of Jonathan Marchessault on the depth chart here, and Nolan Patrick ahead of William Karlsson. So it looks like they're kind of breaking it up into two groups. Shea Theodore, Max Pacioretty, Mark Stone, Nolan Patrick, Dadonov, as the first group. Alec Martinez, Alec Pietrangelo, Jonathan Marchessault, Riley Smith, and William Karlsson on the second group. Look, that second group, Paul, at least the way I see it, would probably be a number one power play on a lot of teams. So that's a pretty nice benefit to have in terms of breaking it down, which, you know, unfortunately for fantasy terms, makes it hard to figure out who's going to be, you know, the top dogs there, right? So you look at the minutes, you know, Karlsson, Smith, Marchessault, Theodore, and Pietrangelo were the top five in terms of straight-up minutes the other night. So this is going to be one to watch. It's hard to pick exactly who's going to be where, at least as far as I see it, Paul.
Yeah, the flyer here amongst them, no pun intended, is former Philadelphia player Nolan Patrick. How about that one, AJ? Flyer, Nolan Patrick. That was a good one.
Yeah, I don't care for Philadelphia Flyer puns, Paul. Well, you'll get no chuckles out of me.
He's a guy that they want to give a real good audition here in Vegas to see if he can fit into the top six. And what better way to find out early goal than throwing him out on the power play, too. This guy used to be known as the second draft pick in his draft year. So there are a lot of high expectations, but he has had a myriad of head-related issues and injuries in the last couple of seasons that have certainly prevented that ceiling from being reached. So, like you said, there's a wealth of opportunity here, and it's one of the few teams that can boast three viable defensemen who factor into the mix, with Theodore, Martinez, and Pietrangelo being pretty good scoring defensemen options on the power play unit. In Washington, boy, I thought we were going to talk about Alex Ovechkin showing signs of declining a little bit in the first game, but go ahead and say what he did. Two goals in that first outing, so it looks like the same old from the Washington Capitals. Captain, and of course he's going to be featured on this power play. Alongside him, though, Evgeny Kuznetsov gets to be the primary feeder of the puck offensively. Nick Backstrom's out of the mix. When he returns, he'll factor in to this unit for sure. But in the meantime, they have Kuznetsov as the puck holder up front, and Anthony Mantha, a viable sniper on a one wing, and then TJ Oshie filling the net front role, and he scored a goal as well in his debut. And they also have, of course, John Carlson, perennially one of the top scoring defensemen in hockey, rounding it out. So a very top heavy first unit. And other guys who can be featured there from time to time will include certainly Tom Wilson, I would think, ahead of the rest of the pack. But Backstrom will factor into this mix, and you wonder who drops out. I wonder, it would probably be Anthony Mantha, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment, Paul. I do think it's Anthony Mantha. Look, if we learned anything from Washington's first game here, it's to stay out of the box if you're facing the Capitals. Like, Ovechkin was on the ice for over 6 minutes of power play time. Three of his 4 points came with the man advantage. Like, this is just a dangerous power play, that surrounds him and really is built to get him the puck and get him opportunity. So if your team is playing Washington, maybe, behoove them to stay out of the box here. In Winnipeg, we'll have Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, Neil Pionk, and Kyle Connor, I would say, are your locks for the first power play group here. The question mark for me is who's going to fill the other spot. Could be Nikolai Ehlers, could be Pierre-Luc Dubois, could even be Paul Stastny. And again, we kind of have to see this, because Scheifele missed the opening game due to his suspension carryover from last season. So we kind of have to see what this mix looks like with him back in it. But I do think there's any number of guys that could challenge for really that one spot. And whoever it is, going into a game, like, you're going to want to know that in terms of, you know, season long, sure, but obviously DFS, like, if you're playing with Scheifele, Wheeler, Connor, and Pionk on the power play, you have a pretty good chance of at least picking up an assist here. Right now we have it as Adam Lowry, but I do think that's subject to change at really any point, Paul.
Yeah, the reason Lowry's there is this is a pretty much a copycat league, AJ. So I've talked about the net front presence in a lot of power play units. Lowry is the guy penciled into that role. But if they go away from that to what we've seen more as a five-man outside the box on the perimeter, Ehlers will factor into the mix, and maybe Pierre-Luc Dubois as well. Stastny's also succeeded in that net front role. So they have a couple of different ways to go and a lot of flexibility because it's one of the more talented teams in the league when you talk about the 10 guys that are in this mix. Nate Schmidt, Josh Morrissey, and Neil Pionk represent another one of those rare teams that have three viable offensive pieces that play defense normally. So, and they all possess pretty good shots from the point too, which is a real added value to the power play. AJ, we went a little bit long on this episode, just as we did in some of the other preseason ones, but I think it's important to note that if you haven't thought about the names that we mentioned on today's show in your drafts, you better be looking for them in the free agent portion of your pools right now, because they're going to be key pieces for all 32 teams this year. And so that's why we went through all of this. But we also want to give our listeners a bit of a flavor for the DFS portion of our show, which will be featured going forward as we do more news and notes on the other clubs. So without further ado, why don't you tell us about your DraftKings picks for tonight's games?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm going to kind of spread it out. I don't have too heavily stacked in any one team here. So just a couple guys that I think are in good spots. First and foremost, you know, my most expensive player on the board here is Nikita Kucherov at 8,400. Filling one of my wing spots. Look, there just isn't a way to get around him. We talked about at the start of the show, they were got laid into a little bit by the coach there, and I do expect them to come out big time facing a weak Detroit team. So Kucherov, I think, is almost a must start across most formats, even though he's going to be probably the most expensive winger regardless. From there, just to round out my wingers here, I really like Alexis Lafreniere tonight, 3,600. He was second on the Rangers in their game in individual Corsi 4, so clearly putting the puck towards the net. I think off the top of my head, I think four of those shots made it through. So, you know, at least trying to put the puck on net, which you like to see, especially in a game where they lost 5-1, still shooting the puck. So I like him at 3,600. And then Victor Olofsson, I talked about him earlier in the show. I talked about him when we did our DraftKings show on YouTube earlier today. 3,400, I think he's a steal at that spot. At the center position, I'm expecting a big year for Alexander Barkov. I think he should be set up for a good season. You know, Pittsburgh's still without some of their big-name guys, so it's an opportunity potentially for Florida to get a win or at least put up some points here. I do like Jared McCann at 5,500. He should be centering that top group in Seattle. I know the first game didn't go great for the Kraken here, but you had four guys who like couldn't practice for like a day and a half because they were on the COVID list, and then they weren't. It was false positives. Like they were ruled out that morning. And then later in the day, they were clear and free. So I just think there was so much uncertainty about that first game that I expect bigger things from Seattle tonight, especially when you consider they're playing Nashville and not Vegas. In terms of defensemen, I go with Adam Fox. Highlighted all of that, 6,400 on DraftKings. I think he's definitely still worth it. Miro Heiskanen is another player, 3,800 for Dallas. Again, he's expected to get power play opportunities. We talked about the fact that Dallas has kind of a 1A, 1B, if you will. So I think at that price range, he's in a good spot at just 3,800. Philip Grubauer is going to be my goalie tonight, 7,400. Again, I think Seattle bounces back. And then my utility spot, I apologize for skipping over that, is from the Islanders, I'm going to go with Kyle Palmieri. Again, we talked here about, you know, kind of power play specialist for them, 4,100, not a huge price tag there. Kind of lets me you know, afford to pay up to get both Kucherov and Barkov in this lineup. And so I like him in that spot as well. That's what I have on DraftKings. Obviously, you know, that was a quick run through. So I will go ahead as soon as I'm done here. I'll tweet this out so everybody can take a look at it as well. Paul, what do you have for FanDuel?
Well, off the top, I'm going to agree with you with on your analysis of Alexander Barkov. And he's my most expensive player, AJ. I didn't go too far up the board and I landed on him. I agree with you. He's headed for a career best year. And I think that means top 10 scorer in the league. Certainly going to play all the big minutes in key situations for Florida. He's my number one guy at $7,600. I pair him with Anze Kopitar. He's going to be the number one guy in Los Angeles, as he has been for the last several years. I think they've improved their talent around him, and so I think he's a viable option. He gets Vegas coming to town tonight, and he's priced in at $6,900, and I think he's primed also for a bit of a rebound year offensively in an 82-game schedule. Andre Palat's another one of those guys who's around the big four offensive pieces in Tampa, and I think he comes in at a cheap value tonight against Detroit. I think it's points night for the Bolts tonight as they venture into Motown. $6,100 the price tag there. I'm going to go back to the Vegas-LA game, but on the other side, I'm looking at Jonathan Marchessault to continue the impressive start that he had in Game 1. He was, for my money, the best player on the nights in that game. $6,000 his price tag. He's a leader of this club, and you can bet he's going to be one of the guys that wants to make up for a bit of a lackluster debut. Even though they won the game, they didn't look that good to me, and I think they want to fix that and send a message to their opponents in this one. And then I go to the Seattle Kraken against Nashville, and I mentioned Matthias Ekholm getting the big contract. He's going to be one of my two defensemen. I always look for value here, AJ, and he's going to play a lot of minutes in Nashville, and I think he gets a good matchup against the visiting expansion club for $4,500. I'll take a shot at him. And then I'll pair him with Tony DeAngelo. We didn't really talk about him too much because there's some question marks around him, quite frankly. You wonder which version are they going to get, the guy that was the super point producer or the enigmatic guy that wasn't really a team player in the past. But I'm thinking he's going to want to make a good early impression for Carolina, feature on the power play, $4,700. That's my, if it turns out poorly, it might be the only time I play him, but it's worth a shot tonight. Then I fill out my roster with a couple of wingers that will be factors on their team's respective offenses all year long. Toivo Teravainen, number one right wing on Carolina for $5,900. I think he's going to be successful on their power play as well as the top line, so well worth the money there. Cole Caulfield is a guy I thought you would be all over in this matchup against Buffalo, AJ. I'm putting him in for $5,600. He gets a lot of shots on goal, and I think at least one will go in tonight against the lowly Sabres. So for $5,600, I plug him in. And then I take another chance, quite frankly, in the Nets, but I'm counting on the fact that Sergei Bobrovsky is a prideful player, and he knows that his job is being threatened by Spencer Knight's presence. A lot of people are touting him as a candidate for Rookie of the Year. That's how much they expect of him. But Bobrovsky's on the big contract. He gets the first chance to play in net tonight for Florida, a team that a lot of people are expecting good things from. And I think they get a Pittsburgh team that comes in probably feeling pretty good after their opening night. And I wonder, a sweep in Florida is a very rare feat for any club. So I'm counting on the home side to bounce back and send a message against the Penguins tonight for $7,700. Thought Bobrovsky's my goalie. So, AJ, any final thoughts before we close it up this week?
No, not really. I mean, we've got a couple games under our belt, but probably our biggest slate of the or set of games comes tonight. And so plenty of hockey to keep watching and keep us interested in. And obviously I'll be watching my Pens. And if you can't tell from our first couple of shows and our DK hits, I'm obviously not feeling super confident, but that win on Tuesday did make me feel better. That's for sure.
I thought you would come on board today and say my team's going 82-0 after beating the Stanley Cup champs. You're taking a very low-key approach, and it's got me quite frankly a little bit freaked out. But our teams are both undefeated. AJ, why don't we just say let's go right on to the conference finals and say Leafs versus Pens? I'd take that right now.
I mean, why don't we just have that be for the cup? We might as well just cut off all the rest of the BS and just put those two teams together for the cup.
I'll second that, AJ. Well, next week you'll be listening to us again, we hope, and you'll get into our more familiar pattern where we give you news and notes on the general performances and and the storylines around each of the 30 clubs, but we hope you enjoyed and appreciate our look at the special teams in today's episode of Puckcast with Statsman and AJ. Thanks for listening to RotoWire's signature fantasy hockey podcast. We thank our sponsor at Owner's Box as well. Check them out. You'll be glad you did. In the meantime, as always, please remember to send your comments or questions on Twitter. Follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22, and you can follow AJ at AJSchultz24. And as always, we invite you to listen to the podcast to get our tips to stay out of the competition in your fantasy hockey planning and research. So long, everybody.